We've got a crowd here, as promised. So, I'm Amy Howe. As a means of introduction, I'm one of several members of, of the DePauw 403B Oversight Committee. And what we wanted to do today, this is actually the first of six sessions that we're having over the next week and a half, to share information in terms of who the committee is, what they've been working on, and what our next steps are. So that as participants in the 403B plan here at the university, you have an opportunity to ask questions, to understand, again, what the activity is of the committee and what we hope to be able to accomplish in the near future. So as you can see, this is a rundown of who's on the committee, and I think it's a great representation. You guys may know I have been at DePauw just 2.5 months, so I came after. This work has, for the most part, been completed. But we have a good representation, like I said, from faculty, staff, administration. John Ludwig, he is our consultant who works pretty much exclusively with retirement plans and is with LHD based out of Indianapolis. So he's our technical resource and guide as we kind of go through the process and has been really invaluable in terms of providing benchmark data about what's going on. Not only in higher ed, but not-for-profits in general for 3D administration. So that's basically who is on the Oversight Committee. And other folks that are here with me today from the committee, Lindsay, Stegman, and Tony Robertson. So the three of us are all on the committee. And who else is here?
Mark.
Oh, Mark. Yay. And Mark's in the back. But Mark, you're not having to talk, right?
No.
Moral support, that's the deal, right? Moral support. With that, I will, you could kind of tag team with this if we want to kind of go through a little bit of the background. I can talk a little bit. So the committee was formed a couple of years ago, actually, to take a look at the 403B plan. And, you know, as is the case with most things in life, when you're participating in something, be it, you know, auto insurance, homeowners insurance, your 403B, it makes sense over time to look at that service that you're paying for and make sure that you're getting the best value for whatever it is that you're buying, and that the products and services that you have is at the level that you can get with what you're paying. So this committee, there were some transparency laws that became in effect in 2009, which actually gave us as participants in the plan more access, easier access to information about the fees and rate structure and what we're actually paying to have our 403B investments. Right now, the way DePauw is set up, on the third bullet point there, there are four different plan administrators that DePauw has. So when a new hire comes, we literally give them four packets of information and say, these are the choices you have. And not only do they have the option of investing with Kraft, Fidelity, American Century, and Valid, four different vendors, but each of those companies have a whole investment portfolio that they can select to invest their money in. And it sometimes is a little confusing, overwhelming, what's the difference, what's the best, what's... I had someone say last week, they sent a question and said, well, I didn't know which one, so when I signed up for my benefits, I signed up for three out of the four. So now in terms of administering and knowing where their money is, it's become a little bit challenging. And it wasn't because they didn't know, it was because there were so many choices available and they felt like that was the safest way to not make that choice. So it does get a little bit complicated when you have a variety, as we do, of plan administrators, and you lose some of the focus that you can have when you're dealing with a smaller number of plan administrators. And that's, we'll talk a little bit more about this. There is one and only one 403B plan. There had previously been two plans on paper that were merged together in January of this year. So our 403B plan is only one plan, and it started that way back at the beginning of 2012. So that's a little bit of history in terms of how we're set up. And just a little anecdotal, you guys know we just transitioned to ADP, right? So we all get our paychecks now from ADP. As we were going through the setup, ADP said, okay, DePauw, give us your codes, your payroll codes that you use for retirement. They had, I think, TIF, was it 6 or 9 fields?
Nine.
The 9 fields. So they had 9 fields for us to use, and generally then that means they're planning on anywhere from 2 to 6 being really needed, right? We are so complex here, we needed not 9 codes, we needed 25. So that gives you an idea in terms of if most of the customers that ADP, a national payroll vendor, has can fit into 9 payroll codes, we're far more complex than your average institution in terms of the different options that you have to invest. So, okay, so that's a little bit of background. Lindsay, do you want to talk a little bit? I'm going to put you on the...
No, that's fine. Yeah, I can also address how each of us came to be on the committee, because I know that's questions that I've gotten from people in my own division. I am the director of annual giving, so I actually work over in advancement, and Tony and I are the staff representation on the committee. And really, there was an email that I believe went out to literally the entire faculty and staff a couple of years ago asking for volunteers. And at that point, I had indicated that I was interested in helping out. So, you know, those of us that are on the committee aren't on it because we have any particular expertise in any of these areas. In some cases, you know, we're learning, and John has been quite helpful, and I look forward to what he'll share with you. But that's how I came to be on the committee. I've enjoyed it up to this point. But basically, we've had a series of meetings where we've heard from John a little bit more about the transparency law changes and exactly the effects that that has on all of us, and it's kind of led us to this point of why we're doing this, why we're reviewing this, and I'm sure John will also tell you that this is not something that is exclusive to just DePauw. This is a lot of institutions, colleges and universities, our own size if not bigger, are going through this exact same process for the exact same reasons that we are. I know you said Purdue just went through this, and it actually took several years for them because they have so many more employees than we do. But basically, at this point, we are to the point now where we have information. We want to hear from you the things that are important to you so that we have enough information so that we do have some companies that want our business. And when we sit down and go to the table with them, we need to know what it is we're negotiating on and make sure that we meet as many of the needs as possible.
So in terms of going through a process, that not only was the committee educated in terms of what responsibilities does the university have, what kind of oversight and information do we need to provide to our employees, but they went through the process of getting, under the third bullet point there, requests for proposals from the vendors that we're currently using and others as well to see who would be interested in serving the DePauw. I think 3 out of the 4 current vendors actually provided RFPs, 1 did not. So Fidelity, TIAA, and Valic, is that what the, or was it American Sunday?
Diversified.
Oh, Diversified. So we have 2 out of the current 4 actually did RFPs. So we have 4 organizations that came back, and 3 of them are still in the running, I think, that actually came back and put in a bid to service DePauw as if it goes in that direction to a single service provider. So the committee did look at those different proposals, and this is part of the communication to try to outreach to everybody and say, here is what we've done, here's what's where we are in the process and going forward. You know, it looks like, you know, there's definitely an opportunity to enhance not only the services to employees, but to reduce the fees that are being paid, that we're paying as participants in the 4-3-D plan. So,
you want to take over here?
Yeah, sure.
Now, first thing that often comes to mind when we come into meetings like this, people are worried about takeaways. You know, what are they taking away? Things of that nature, and to be honest, there is no takeaways, right? What we're looking at is if you look at your 4 vendors today, an employee basically has 600 different funds that they could pick and choose from. Some of the funds are in the same in other platforms, but they're not all the same, right? So what we're trying to do is look at what's out there, get the best in breed, and bring it forward to the participants. Because I think that's very important. So you have here's what you're doing, and here's how you can help everybody going forward. Back in 2009, the rules changed for everybody, and changed for DePaul and all the other universities out there, and what that did was that changed the rules and what had to be done and who had to do it and things of that nature. And as Lindsay said, is a communication went out back in 2010 to kind of start the formation of this committee and start looking at what's out there, what we need to do, what things do we need to do. The committee, I can tell you, I've sat and went through in multiple meetings going through what the fiduciary process is, what they need to understand in that process so that they were getting training so they can help look at things on an ongoing basis. We then integrated the best practices, right? What things we should be looking at, and we took that, and we didn't just go out to the four vendors, we went out to the marketplace, right? So we went to the Vanguards and Fidelities of the world and look at, here's everybody that's out there that would be willing to bid on a plan this size, right? Because if you look at it, you have four vendors today, and what you have to think about is the more money at one place, what do you get? The best pricing, right? So if you look at where the money's at or where it's sitting at, the more money a vendor has or will get, the better pricing they were willing to get. And so that really drives, right? It's just like if you went to Walmart and then you're going to buy bulk, or you went to Sam's or Costco and you're going to buy in bulk, what do you get? Better pricing, right? No different than in the financial world today, right? And this is not new if you were out in a corporation in the for-profit world, right? They've been doing this since 1986. Right, it's just now come to the not-for-profit and the higher ed marketplace back in 2009, and that was driven by the Department of Labor and the IRS. Right, what they did is they went out and they said, hey, what are these people doing to help and drive those, because here's where the costs are, right? And what they wanted to do is give you the same advantages that you've seen in the for-profit world. The first thing we did was we looked at it, and you said you had two plans. Amy said we changed the plan and merged two. We used to have two plans, a 401A and a 403B, and we actually merged those. And the reason for doing that is there was no really need to have two, right? You had, different accounts, and you could basically have it all in one, and so it made common sense. The committee had a look at it, and we sat in a relatively long meeting one day looking at all the plan provisions, right? What we didn't want to do is take any takeaways. You probably would look at me and say, oh man, I can remember that meeting. Right? We sat up there and we went through all the various options and what you could do and what was in one plan, what was in the other plan, and how did you pull those together so that they were identical. Right? And then we looked at the services. So you have services with American Century, you had different services with Fidelity, you had different services with TFCREF, you had different services with Val. Right? And what services were important. And that's part of what we want to get as far as feedback from you today. Is what things do you want to see the vendors bring, right? Because when we sit down, and these vendors are very interested, right, in having your business, but what services do you feel are the most important? Because what we want to do is start categorizing them so we can make the best choice for everybody. What we then wanted to do is also down here at the bottom, look at the administration efficiency, right? Today, the plan has to go through an annual audit. And it's not necessarily a fun thing, but there, if you've ever sat through an audit, the university has to go through one for the plan. And when they had two plans, they had to do two, but now we can do it in one. But what that did is it basically break down all of the various things. So what we're doing is looking for the efficiencies that we could do by having reporting and things of that nature, because today, the university pulls a report from four vendors. They send out four different deposits, they're sending out different employer sources. So as Amy said, 25 or 26 codes is a lot, right? And that is just the nature of how things were started and where they went through that process. So what are the best practices? What are all the universities that are going through the same thing you're sitting through today going through? Right, and I can go down the list, and I've got a list so you can kind of see who they are. So we put them out there. One, everybody's looking at a plan document. They're looking at an investment policy statement. Right, today you have four vendors, and you each individually pick and choose how you want your money to go in. Right, and you'll have that same advantage going forward with whatever we do. Right? The difference is how do you know whether a fund's bad, good, average, what have you? How do you know whether it should stay in the plan or it should be in or out of it? Nobody knows, right? Unless you're really spending a lot of time with it. The committee basically came through and said, here's what we want to have as far as what we should be looking at from the investments that are out there. Monitoring of loans and limits, vendor consolidation, single versus multiple, tiered investment structure, number of and types of investment options, right? Today, most of you buy retail investments, right? You could buy what you buy when you go to the street. When you buy as collective, what do you get? You can walk in with institutional pricing, right? So that drives down your cost, which gives a better deal for everybody in this room, right? Because what you're going to do is pay less for what you're going to be investing in. We looked at auto enrollment, we looked at the default fund practices, we looked at self-directed mutual fund window. One of the things that I think you will see, and it's the same thing that Purdue rolled out, is there's really three tiers of investments. And I look at it, I've been doing this for almost 30 years, and you can see it in my hair because I'm losing it quickly, but there's really three tiers of investment, right? There's a group of employees that, what? Don't know anything about investing, don't want to spend any time knowing investing. They get home from work at night, what is the last thing they want to do is look at their investments, right? Now, I'm not part of that group because I'm anal retentive. I'll tell you that right up front. I love looking at it and reading and detailing. When was the last time you read a mutual fund prospectus? Right? Well, yeah, he's sitting back here laughing, right? We sent out last year, the first time, to all the employees and staff in electronic format, the fee disclosure, which was 160 some odd pages long. Who in here read it? Wow. I thought I'd get at least one outside of myself. Right? I wrote those and helped put that together. I now look at it and say, oh my gosh, this is what I did. Oh, what are you guys doing? Right? What was that doing? What we're doing is trying to start laying out the framework of trying to help you determine what you're doing. Right? So we're actually spoiling it, all those things down. So the second tier is there's a, you know, people that want to spend time with investments, but hey, just give me the list of 10, 15 funds that I really should pick and choose from, kind of a core menu, and I'll pick and choose from them. Right? So you get that kind of group. And the other group, which is what I would call the people that want to maybe use a self-directed broker account, is this, hey, I know that everything there is to know about investing, I'm gonna wheel and deal and I'm gonna do this and this. I don't want to have any restrictions, and I want to basically be able to do that. Right? We're looking at all three of those options in the new plan. So it gives each investor in here the ability, based on who they are, to pick and choose where they want to go. Up there at the top, independent investment education. Most of you today, if you're going to get educated, what happens? You have one of the four vendors, reps, come in here. By the way, if you look at TFRF, and I'm just going to pick on TFRF, or I can pick on American Century, or I can pick on Fidelity. What do they offer today? Only their investments. Right? Only their investments. When we took them out to bid, guess what they did? You don't have to have just our investments. In fact, several of them said, you don't have to have any of our investments. You can have these. Right? What did that do? Right now, there's somebody that they're now being held accountable to that drives them to have giving you the best offer. That's what we're driving forward. Right? So you're going to get to see some of that as we go through this process. Well, second bullet point over there at the top is probably the hardest one, and I will tell you I spent several meetings talking about revenue sharing and hard dollar costs and things of that nature with the committee. Anybody in the committee want to stand up and give my detailed explanation? Mark's back there saying, I might be able to tackle that one, right? When you look at all the fund expenses, and I'm just going to give you kind of a broad picture. When you look at the fund expense, and let's say it's 75 basis points today, which is 0.75% is what you have as far as the fund expense. Part of that fund expense goes to marketing. Part of that fund expense goes to running the fund or paying the investment manager. Part of it goes to different factors. And then there's a little sliver that's actually called revenue sharing, right? That they provide to the record keepers to provide the statements and the administration, the online access, and things of that nature, right? Well, guess what? You get the best deal when you split it up into four vendors. You know? Right? Because guess what? They don't know how much money or where the money is going to come from. When you can buy with power and you buy with bulk, what happens? They're going to give you the best deals in the revenue sharing. Right? We also looked at what hard dollar costs are out there. Right? There's hard dollar costs. There's, you can take a loan, you do this, you do that. There's costs that are involved. How can we drive those costs lower? What makes those happen? Bundled under a bundled and unbundled administrative structure, master administrator. Today you have basically four platforms, right? And guess what? It takes Amy's office talking to four different administrators running one plan. Right? Going forward, we'll have one administrator, and they will deal with the investments. Right? And you will have the access to go and basically say, hey, let's say it's the choice is to choose XYZ company. XYZ company is going to have, could have Fidelity funds, it could have Vanguard funds, it could have American funds, it could have all these, but it's going through one place in one statement. Right? So you're going to not have to be tied just to one fund family. It's going to open the doors to all those. Make it easier for you. So that second to last bullet point is the open investment architecture. Right? What that will allow you as participants to do is have not just one fund family that they can choose from, but multiple all the way across the board. Right? So you can have better education and better tools to help you actually determine how much money you're going to need for retirement. As I said earlier, I've been doing this for 30 years. The number one key that I look at when I've been doing these meetings is what? Does everybody in here want to retire someday? You do. Does it get scarier as you get closer? And when do you start thinking about it? How much money do you need to be saving, and are you saving that appropriate dollar amount? Right? So we can help build the tools for those people that want to take advantage of those, tying it into the system so it actually helps you, so you're getting reporting and things of that nature that will help you keep on track if you want to do that. Right? Whether you're 25 or 65, it does not matter. What it will do is it will help you, guide you, if you really want to take the initiative to do it. Now, what we know is most people go in by picking and screaming. But if we can get you engaged in that process, all of a sudden you become a better investor, and you really get to the goal that you eventually want to have somewhere down the road. Last bullet point, active versus passive, right? Today you've got multiple things, right? But what we want to introduce is whether you're doing indexing or active managers to determine what is best for you as an individual. And somebody may say, I want to be an index buyer, and so we'll provide index options. I want to buy active managers, and we'll have options for you. But you can then pick and choose under one roof. Got it? Single vendor solution is the choice, and you'll see why, because most of your counterparts are already in the meetings doing the same thing. Right? Most of them have already decided or are in the process of moving through with those vendors. Right? You're going to say, what's taking me so long? Or why are we going through all every the school and the administration and the committee want to make sure that they help and do the right things for everybody that's involved. Right? So, going to a single bit.
I was going to say, the thing that keeps coming up as definitely the theme in the meetings of the committee is, what option is the least that can lower the fees that we're paying now as participants? Because even though you might not have read the fee disclosure, we're all paying fees because we're in the fund. And what can give us more choices than we have now? So if you're in Fidelity, for example, and you only have Fidelity investment options, now all of a sudden you'll have a portal to have, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of options of what plans you want to be in. And again, it's the vendors are being forced to be more cost-effective with us to provide more investment options and to provide consolidated services here. So they'll have a commitment to us to have on-site training, to have on-site individual meetings, and it's much easier to do that as an institution when we have that volume in terms of investment dollars with them. So whereas now people that might have, say you want three different funds, you want a CREF, a Fidelity, and American Century, that means now you might have to get three different statements, look at three different prospectus, look at three different fee disclosures. Going forward, the goal would be to have access to those same types of funds through one portal. So you've got one central planning point or one focus point that you're doing your retirement planning from. It's not these multiple vendors. So obviously the fee structure is advantageous, but also just from an education standpoint, from a personal management standpoint, I think there's some advantages to be considered in terms of how can I plan to manage my personal retirement planning. So
any questions on any of why the single vendors?
And again, the decision hasn't been made to do that, but it is such a strong trend right now among colleges and universities. And I think the next slide might have some of the... There it is. These are some of the colleges and universities locally, just a select group, that are going through this transition now. IU, I believe, went to two vendors, and then they kept Kraft and Fidelity. But again, it's been a process of collecting the information, depositing, right? At having such an active the representation on the committee is fantastic, you know, being from different parts of the university. And just the longevity that they've already had a couple of years to be able to go through, learning about the issues, getting educated, and reaching out now with guidance, reaching out to vendors and figuring out some strategies and options for moving forward. So, and I think this is some of the stuff that John's spoken about. I want to be kind of cognizant of the time and make sure that we have a chance to ask questions. But again, there are numerous benefits to us as participants to reduce the administration down to a single source. So these are just some.
I think if you look at bullet point number 4 up there, what you have to realize is that eventually you want to leverage the point. Right. You go to Fidelity, or you go to Tia Kraft, or you go to American Century, or you go to Valley. Who's keeping the revenue today? Each of those vendors, right? So what we want to do is we want to be in control of that revenue for the participants, get you the best deal going forward, right? And how do we do that? We can drive down the costs and the structures of those plans to make it better for each one of the participants that fall. Without giving them choice.
And so again, these are just a select handful of some colleges and universities that are going through this now. And then the next steps for the committee. So the committee decided, obviously to take this time over the next few weeks to have these sessions where the information can be shared with everybody. In May, there will be on-campus presentations by the vendors. So this is in response to the request for proposals. So these are the organizations that would like to have the business, would like to have the DePaul Retirement Savings Plan business, and they're going to come and talk about their value proposition for the university. And then a service provider recommendation, ideally, would be made sometime this fall by the committee. And then another series I envision of similar meetings where the update would be, here's what the different vendors provided, here's what was considered, and here's a recommendation, and an opportunity then to discuss it and have some dialogue. And then again, a recommendation as well in the fall. So that's kind of the timing of what's anticipated over the next few months kind of wrap up what's been, I guess, a 2 or almost 3 year process by the time it's all said and done. So now it's about 12:08. We have about 10 or 15 minutes. I didn't know what questions you might have or thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, the worry you of course have is, we're going to one vendor, has lots of advantages, but is that the vendor I like? And they may provide the best cost, or they provide the best service. And so, I mean, if you have right now, say you have your money invested in TIAA CREF funds, and you decide that TIAA CREF is not going to be our one vendor anymore, it's going to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. What happens to my investments in TIAA CREF?
You can actually leave them there at TIAA. It's just the new money would go to whatever the single vendor is going forward. And you might be able to, if you like the TIAA funds, be able to put them into TIAA funds that they're on the platform.
But they might not be. So what you already have there, and then would you, what kind of service would you get from TIAA for your past
same,
funds?
Yeah, you'd get the same service that you're getting today.
That would change.
That's not going to change.
Because you dropped,
not going to
drop by default.
No, you still have your money there, so that they're not going to, nothing will change there.
The list of, excuse me, the list of universities that you provided, what's the consensus that they, who did they choose?
All over the board.
All over the board.
Yeah, there's some up there that went, Purdue chose Fidelity, some of those that really chose Tia Craft. A couple of others chose a couple of the other, basically, of those lists, we gave you to those universities picked a single vendor of the vendors that you're that were looking for. So they're a really good vendor. These vendors are, and when we boil it all down, are really good vendors. They're going to provide top line services and things of that nature all the way across the board. They want to be in this market.
Question about the funds that are going to be offered once you switch to a single vendor. I noticed when I signed up for the plan that there were way too many funds, which we've talked about. And I know that now it sounds like we'll have just as many funds available that we could offer. What's your plan for how many funds you're going to offer and how you decide which funds are going to be offered?
I think the committee, that's the decision that's yet to be made, but I think what it will be is it'll be a three-tier structure. A structure for the participant that doesn't really want to pick, and they can put it all into one fund, right, and have it done for, kind of a managed fund, have it done for you. You'll have then a core lineup, which will probably be, I don't know, 14 to 18 funds, and you, if a person wants to spend time with those 14 to 18, they can get the best of breed within those 14 to 18. Keep in mind, the ongoing job of the committee would be to review those funds and make recommendations and changes to those funds on an ongoing basis. So you got somebody looking at it other than just you. And then the brokerage window option, which is for those persons that want to go out and they don't like any of those choices and they want to go out and pick their own, they'll be able to open up a brokerage window and basically pick and choose amongst 6,000 or 7,000 funds if they want to do it that way.
So when you sign up, it would be like, what type of investor are you, one, two, or three? And
yep.
Then
you get one packet of information versus here. Yep.
Can you transfer your funds? So say the new vendor is, Ballot or whatever, and you're in a different one. Can you move your funds?
Yep, you'll be able to
move
your...
You're not having, because this goes to a single vendor, but now all of a sudden we could all have two vendors.
Yep, so you each person... and again, each individual will, when we roll it out and whoever that vendor is, will have a team on site for those people that want to make those decisions and make those things happen, so that you can basically make that take place.
Should point out that if you're taking funds out of TIA Prep, it's like a 10-year lag before all of your money is out. It's encumbered, and you can, I think,
those that
you have invested every year or something.
For those that are in the TIA Craft, if you're in the TIA traditional, that has a 10-year put on it. Which means it's not 100% liquid. It takes 10 years to get all your money out of it. Most people didn't look at or read that within the confines of that. So you may, for a period of time, if you're in TIA and you have TIA money, it may take you some period of time to get all your money out of the TIA. The Craft side is liquid, so you could actually transfer it.
Question.
Isn't it true that if you're in TIA and you die, then they put the rest of that money in?
No, it is not.
That's what you're
saying. If you have money in TIA traditional and you die, it goes to over your beneficiary's name. If you want, by the way, if you want to name his beneficiary, I'm more than happy.
All right.
You look like you saved a long time, so we can make that work.
What is a profile of a hypothetical employee that's benefiting the most from the move to a single vendor and the one who's benefiting the least from moving to a single vendor?
Give me an example of what you're...
I think you're saying, like, who could be a big winner?
I didn't say a loser, but who's going to benefit the least?
Because someone wants to have a ton of options, the brokerage would, I mean, there are different facets of it. So like the brokerage option could be a big benefit to someone depending on what their priorities are. So they want to have that daily, you know, that daily access and that activity level with their investing. But also someone who maybe just wants basic education and they want to have somebody on site with the new vendor. I know we currently have people that come on a somewhat regular basis to do individual meetings. But whatever vendor you have and there's a single source, you definitely would work with them to have more regular, probably on-site training. So maybe people that want more training would benefit from that aspect of it. So I think it's how you prioritize or weight even the different advantages.
Okay. I think the biggest difference that the participant, the one with the most are the participants today that are paying the highest cost. And I won't say which vendor that is or vendors that is, but there's certain participants that pay an extra large cost than they do with the other vendors. Right? So the person I would be the least is if you have all your money sitting in an index fund, and let's say the index fund is 20 basis points and we move it from 20 to 10, does that person get as big a benefit? Probably not. Right? All the way across the board, though, I think everybody gets some benefit just about how much of that benefit they require. I think there's benefits that will benefit everybody across the board.
John?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges and the reason that I got on the committee on the staff side and facilities is to protect all those. I thought going into the committee that I would sit there and be a BC student on this committee and found out very rapidly that I was a D. We'll just say a D. student on that committee. And as I look at all our staff in just facilities, I sense the responsibility to make sure everybody was protected, and then those that are above me can expand their plan to do what they need. But I think it's very challenging to have a wide plan that takes an entry level, wherever that position is, up to, I'll use Gary Lemon as an example that's on the committee, thankfully, and benefit all of those people. And it's a huge challenge to do that, and that's what we're trying to do, is to protect entry level with zero experience that needs his or her future protected, as well as Gary Lemon, who can more than capable of doing it himself. So that's the challenge.
What would you like to see the vendors offer that they're not offering today? Can I throw that out there? If you look at who you're with today, what would you like to see them providing you that you're not getting today?
Easier access to them. I've never yet been able to schedule a meeting at one of the times that they come to campus. And the only time I actually did, it was canceled. And I couldn't make it the next time that person came to campus.
Okay. Easier access. Anybody else?
Should we plan on meeting them every opportunity, or is once a year sufficient enough?
I think we're going to, my vision of it is, as it'll come up, is that I think you should meet with them at least annually. Right? Whether you do that on a one-on-one, or you come into what I envision is having a group broad topic, and then if you want to drill down on a particular topic, then you have the capability of drilling down on the individual topic. I get more feedback from participants when you sit in bigger groups, right? It's like this today where you're all, and I can cover a whole topic about the same thing. Everybody can hear it, and whether you know everything there is to know about it, or, hey, I don't want to say that I don't know, but I want to come in and listen, you can get that feedback. I'm normally in front of people, so I kind of do that as a natural course. So.
It would be nice to have more on-site workshops that are educational for a group rather than just one-on-ones as well.
Yeah.
It seems what we mostly have are one-on-ones.
Yeah, I would like to bring it back to more of a workshop format and then one-on-one for those people that want the one-on-ones. Anything else?
There doesn't seem to be a lot of like investment advice. They're a little bit leery of trying to give you anything directly, and they sort of say, well, you know, maybe you want to get into the 2035, or, you know, whatever, and
right.
Just go with something like that. But there's not a lot of detailed discussion about pros and cons.
Because they don't want to cross the line of becoming an advisor versus a different level of responsibility and things of that nature. So one of the caveats is we want to build an advice selection so that you can, if the person wants to get and take the time to do it, they can have an advice arm that they can go to get that advice. Anything else?
Well, I just think along the lines of what Tony was saying about, you know, protecting the most naive investors, making sure that the funds we're offering are all meeting the very competitive fee rate.
Mm-hmm.
So especially people in that profile are not going to be finding any investments that have initially large fees. And also maybe more emphasis on target date return funds, something like that. I know those are so popular and seems to be working really well for people, and that's a really good way for someone who's especially like just starting out, maybe never had a 403b before, to get into the market in an appropriate investment.
Okay. How was lunch? Was it the lunch or my talking that brought you? I mean, lunch was pretty good, wasn't it?
That's what I think, and I think sometimes too when we talk, you know, regardless of how we end up, if we have more opportunity to do maybe quarterly education sessions with a vendor, that we say to them, listen, but again, one of the advantages, we can say, listen, we want a lunch and learn. We want you guys to just kind of come in, host a lunch, you know, maybe do it 3 days a week, you know, a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of a given week, where you guys can come in and have an opportunity to, I know it's hard to find convenient time, but it seems to be that if you do grab, if you're able to grab and go with your lunch, that you can kind of double up and use the time that you would ordinarily have as lunchtime for education or information sharing. So,
or even like mini courses, mm-hmm. or maybe it's over the course of a month, but you get more, it's with a small group, but you get more individual attention that includes some advice
mm-hmm.
that helps you
yeah.
move along and answers your questions over time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I think we are finishing on time here at 2:24. What I would encourage you, if you don't mind, thank you for coming. We are having our next session here today at 2:45. And then tomorrow at the same time, 11:40, for any of your coworkers, same thing, lunch is available. If they're interested, if they could just shoot Robin an email in HR, she's doing planning. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you.